So, Endwalker takes the player from a tiny island nation all the way to the moon and the literal edge of the universe.
Which makes you wonder how the Aetherite network calculates that teleportation bill.
I guess Charlian economics must be out of this world.
Traveling that far will definitely leave you spaced out.
Square Enix gave us an incredibly emotional, cinematic narrative with Endwalker, but the community spent the first week obsessed with low polygon grapes?
They were so blocky, you could have used them for construction materials.
Oh, and oh my God, let me tell you online how many times I had to hear somebody whine about those damn things.
You're right, and then the anger turned to sadness after they got altered and an update. Talk about a grape depression.
Now, this expansion finally gave the community playable male Viera, turning every major city into a literal rabbit warren.
It was a very specific demographic shift in Eorzea.
Yeah, players really hopped on that trend immediately.
Yes, the player base was absolutely multiplying.
They're silly and they're goofy, mysterious and spoofy. Kemco makes them loopy, the Backtrack family. Their podcast is a blast, talking games from the past. They break down every class, the Backtrack family.
Beat. Defeat. Complete.
They trash things they abhor, and praise things they adore. They never are a bore, the Backtrack family.
Hello and welcome to RPG Backtrack, your regular deep dive into your favorite RPGs. We are a production of RPGamer.com, bringing you such fine podcasts like RPG Cast, your weekly RPG news show, Q&A Quest, your weekly RPG feedback show, and us, your bi-weekly RPG nostalgia show. I'm your host, Kelly Ryan, and wait, he's with me this week. I thought you're supposed to be out for MMO month, Matt.
Oh, I spent 3 weeks on the road, but the way we had it scheduled this year, it was like perfectly got back in time for this one. Although I pulled in around 3 a.m., so this episode's going to be like MMPO. I may some passed out. You're going to hear me at the beginning. Maybe I'll wake up before the end. And but I think for most of the middle, I'm going to be snoozing. I've been off and on all day.
Yes, we'll let Matt sleep, and probably you'll probably go to sleep anyway because it's Final Fantasy 14 time Endwalker, and well, I
Oh,
have a
the game wasn't that bad. It was pretty good from what I hear.
No, it's just
Yeah.
for more the story summary, which I found a concise summary. I don't know
Ooh.
how long it'll take to get through. We've got Robert Albright and Noodle on to talk about Final Fantasy 14 Endwalker, which I'm told is a really good expansion, and I'm still running around in Shadowbringers.
It is a really good expansion. It is one of the most depressing expansions, but it's still really good.
A lot of people really, really enjoyed it. Some people say it's the best, some people think it's the second best, but it's really good regardless.
I believe it's the second best. I believe Shadowbringers is still the best expansion, but Endwalker is still really good.
Well, hot. I guess not so hot a take.
No, not that much, not that hot of a take.
depending on who you are.
Did we, was this, oh, no, it wasn't that. There was a year that one of the expansions, didn't we almost have it like game of the year for us?
It might have been Shadow.
I think it was Shadowbringers because that one was one of the best expansions.
Okay.
And a lot of people on staff were playing it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, I think part of it is because, Endwalker is the came out around the same time that WoW Shadowlands did, and Shadowlands was not a popular expansion.
Yeah.
So a lot of people jumped ship, rightfully so.
Well, this was also the end. This was like the end of the arc that had been going on for since like 2013. So this was like the last expansion of the whole story arc before they were going to start a new one. So this was a pretty big expansion.
And then WoW took that and they're like, oh, we can do multi-expansion story arcs?
No, it still took them several expansions before they started that.
Yeah, yeah. True. Still, whether or not it'll work out for him, it's hard to say. Though I've heard good things about Midnight, but I've got too much other stuff to play. Too busy.
I enjoyed Midnight.
I do not play WoW.
One of these days, so I'll come back.
I played a trial version of WoW once, and I did not really enjoy it that much.
You guys are the ones to ask. There's going to be a trial at the end of the summer for Switch 2 people, right? With Final Fantasy 14?
Yes, my roommate has a Switch 2, and she also plays 14, and she's planning on trying it out. Mm-hmm. So I get to...
Maybe I'll give it a sometime, and I've listened to you every year.
Every year, come on.
It's the noodle cast.
Yeah.
RPG back noodle. Noodles back. I don't know.
I was having a drink when you said RPG back noodle. That was like, okay, I almost choked on my drink.
I was like, I just got to replace noodle with one of the words.
It's the yearly noodle track.
That's a good one. There you go. There we go.
When I get to...
That's the one.
Yes.
Well, why don't we take a brief musical interlude so that we can cue up some noodle tracks. Hey, that was a transition.
There you go.
And then we'll come back and dive in. And welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are talking about Final Fantasy XIV Endwalker, released on December 7th, 2021. And yeah, I did a little bit of research, and this was about a year and some change after Shadowlands. And I think at this point, people were kind of...
Shadowbringers.
I'm talking about Shadowlands.
Wow, yeah.
Because, like I said, this is like the first... I feel like the first time in history that Final Fantasy was outdoing WoW as far as subscription numbers, and it was because people were sick to death of Shadowlands at this point. And this expansion was actually really good. Also, Shadowlands was developed during COVID, but unlike Shadowlands, actually they did a good job of developing it because they had to announce it in a virtual fan fest because they had to cancel actual fan fest, and they were having to work from home to work on this expansion.
Yeah, they did that, and the Square Enix had to do that too. But luckily they didn't have FanFest during COVID. I think the next FanFest was 2023.
Mm-hmm. So there you go.
I even remember the beta was also virtual, or the not the beta, but the
The keynote.
No, they had where they invite the players to do like a test.
Oh yeah, that I don't remember a word for that, but I know what you're talking about.
I was in that actually.
Nice.
So some of the new features include two new classes, including the first original class, not from a pre-existing Final Fantasy. So you've got the Sage, the barrier-based healer class, and then the Reaper, who is the brand new hotness.
I did unlock Reaper. Did a couple things with Reaper. If you really like chopping, it's a heavy hitting melee DPS. So like, if you like having like a massive scythe and just want to cut things, that's the class for you.
I like cutting things. No, that class looked very fun.
It also has a really sweet look to it. I really like the way they did it. It's very dark.
It's a very fun class to play. A lot of AoE and sweeping. It can be a little bit tricky with its game mechanics sometimes, but I do enjoy playing Red Mage for life, though.
I mean, Pictomancer for life, but that'll come later.
What else have we got? As well as some jobs got overhauled. Apparently, the summoner got completely revamped
again.
Oh, yeah,
again.
Can they just can't get right?
They can't figure it out. I stopped playing summoner a long time ago. I was like, they keep changing it. I don't know what to do anymore. I'm just gonna not.
And then some new places to go to, obviously, and a boosted level cap.
Yes.
Was this the first time they've done a stat squish?
Yes. Yeah, and that came about because during Shadowbringers, they were having issues with overflow issues with threat versus damage.
Yeah, that's one of the problems of long-running RPGs like this, is how big the numbers get and how you've got to squish them down every once in a while but still have things scale.
Yeah, yep. I remember them talking about that. I remember Yoshi P talking about that in one of the live letters.
Yeah.
Because, I literally can't. About it
a couple of times.
Yeah, it was just like, we literally can't. We don't have enough numbers. I forget the exact wordage, but basically the numbers were getting too long, and they're like, the damage and everything is still the same. It's just, we need to scale it down. So you still do a lot. You still do the same amount of damage. It's literally can't have, 8,000 characters for damage anymore.
I always thought of a simple way to explain it is just lopping a zero or two off the end, since you're talking about the millions and billions as far as damage goes.
That's basically what he thought.
Some people were really mad about it, though.
Yeah, people get mad.
I mean, people are going to be mad about it, but like, they get mad about everything. You can't please everyone. But honestly, if like, even the current fan fest, when they talked about the PS3, or was it the PS4?
PS4. It would be PS4 now.
Yeah, they were talking about the PS4, and they're like, we literally can't
support this anymore.
Support it anymore. Like, Sony has actually reworked a lot of the stuff to get 14 to still work on the PS4, but like, we've maxed it out. Like, we can't do anything. They can't add anything to it anymore because they've maxed it out. And it's like, I'm sorry. That's just how things go. Like, with the, especially the stat squish thing, like, you're gonna hit a wall. You can't just continue to expand and not hit, the max or anything. It's not never ending.
And there's no way they're going to abandon consoles for this version of, or this game in general, because the console numbers is probably why it's so popular.
Yeah, especially with the whole Switch 2 thing. Like, that was a huge surprise announcement. No one saw that one coming.
I certainly didn't. I didn't think the Switch 2 would be powerful enough.
Yeah.
Probably have to play a dock.
It's on the PS5, so there's that.
And Xbox.
Yep.
And Xbox.
So the big thing about this expansion is it's basically wrapping up a storyline that was started as far back as Rome Reborn.
Yep.
Yes, this is wrapping up from 2013 when it started.
Gosh, I first played this when I was got married. At least that's what I was playing, Rome Reborn.
This goes back to even before Rome Reborn. This is going back to like 1.0.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, if you think about it. Yeah, definitely. It did start in 1.0 because Rome Reborn didn't redo the canon from 1.0. It just
This is basically the end of the whole Zodiac and Ascian stuff.
Yeah.
So
the whole Heidelin Zodiac art. Yeah.
So you want to recap the story in 30 minutes or less? Sorry. No.
That's funny. I like that.
I mean, I do have a bare bones outline.
I know. And I read it and I'm like, yeah, this is pretty much it.
I'm sure there is a little bit more, to it than that, but it seemed like the basic gist. Somebody bringing down the end of the world and some artificial intelligence getting despair.
Well,
it's a little more complicated than AI, but
the beginning of Endwalker is very depressing.
Even the middle of it, Endwalker, is very depressing.
So pretty much the whole Endwalker, except for maybe post-story. Well, post-story is kind of depressing, too. So this whole expansion is very depressing. However, you go into it from Shadowbringers, and you're like on this high with Shadowbringers, and then you go into Endwalker, and you're like, and I just remember getting into Endwalker and thinking, I need to take a break. This is hella depressing. It took me forever to do Endwalker because I was just like, it's so depressing. I don't want to go back to it. But then, like, towards middle and end, you get really into the story, especially when you get to Elpis. When it's less depressing. Because you basically go back in time. Ultima
Thule's pretty depressing, though.
I mean, everything's depressing in this expansion, but it's very well written. Very good.
I also saw there was time travel stuff.
Yes. So that's, basically, the end of days, which was happening in 1.0, the calamity. We basically stopped it.
No. This is the end of days from
the ancients.
Yeah, yeah.
So this was the ancients, which was like way how long
way
ago?
Long time ago.
Way long time ago, like before anything, before 1.0, basically. They were able to stop the end of days barely, but then the with what happens with a rogue Ascian, Fandaniel, it's a whole thing. Everyone knows about the Heidelin Zodiac thing because when you're playing 14, you go through and. You know, Heidelin does like the hear, feel, think thing that you hear throughout the game. And you kind of know what happened. You know, Heidelin is the mother crystal, and you just kind of know about her throughout the game. But then in this expansion, you actually go back in time to when the ancients were before Heidelin and Zodiac existed, when the ancients were alive, and you learn their Heidelin and Zodiac's backstory about how like they used to be people. They were ancients. And you're like, what? And you don't learn about this until the end of Endwalker. And it's crazy. But you don't know this in the beginning. Everything is just it's like the apocalypse is happening, and you have to figure out how to stop it.
Well, we actually knew Zodiac was, because that was explained to us previously.
You don't really know who Heidelin is. Heidelin, you just know, is the Mother Crystal. And you're just like, she's just like this god Mother Crystal thing. And, you know, Shadowbringers ends with, like, you stopped everything, everything is together again, and everyone's happy. And then the end of days comes in Endwalker, and you have to figure out how to stop it.
And you're also trying to figure out what exactly it is.
Oh, yeah, you have to figure out what the end of days is. Because all you see, like, you're just kind of thrown into it. All you see is, like, the doomsday look outside. You know, kind of like if the apocalypse happened here, you would just be like, fireballs and red sky and there's people monsters. People
mutated into weird Cthulhu-esque monsters.
Yeah, and there's, like, monsters things. And then you find out that people are turning into these monsters and then going after other people. So you have to kill them. And it's really sad. Like, basically, they get so depressed, so into their own despair, that they turn into these monsters. And so we don't know how to stop it until we figure that out. We're like, oh, when they get really desperate, really, really depressed or really scared, they turn. And so you have to, like, you're basically like the scions are like running around trying to figure out, like, you guys can't be sad. Like, you have to be happy. It's kind of like, what do you do?
As someone who has had a shitty week, I feel this. I would have turned into a monster on Tuesday.
Yeah, you just kind of get thrown in the beginning, and it's a lot. As someone who actually has generalized depression, it was a lot. I had to take a break.
I believe it. Yeah, this expansion was not happy, happy, joy, joy.
And in 2023, when I went to FanFest and we did the press conference. And when they talked more about Endwalker that was coming, they told us, they're like, it's dark. It's going to be different. It's going to be the end of the arc, but it's going to be sad. So we were warned.
I'll definitely talk about that down in the round table bit.
Okay, so...
I'm letting Noodle take the lead this year because I've taken the lead the last 3 years.
I know, because I hate doing this, but I will go through the story. So throughout the whole game, we all know about the Ascians and how they're pretty much evil and they keep trying to mess with us, our plans, and try to basically ruin the world. And this one, of course, we start out with the Ascians causing chaos, as they do. So a rogue Ascian, Fandaniel, partners with the nihilistic Garlean Prince Xenos Yegelvis, which we all know from previous expansions. Fandaniel wishes to recreate the ancient apocalyptic final days to end all existence. So back before the gods, with the ancients, they did a final days thing. They stopped it. Fandaniel wants to recreate it because they stopped it the first time. And he's all like, I don't want them to stop it again. I want this to actually happen. I want us to actually go through with it. Xenos agrees to assist solely to force final world ending rematch with the Warrior of Light. Because, of course, he hates Warrior of Light because we keep defeating him because he's stupid. But together, they build massive spires across the globe to siphon Aether and cause chaos. So this is where everyone is running around. This is where everyone sees, like, the apocalyptic look in different cities and areas. Where the red sky, the fireballs, these spires are coming up. And there's, like, you know, they can tell that the Aether is getting sucked. They can tell the Aether's coming in. It's causing people to turn, whatever. So we have to figure that out. We don't know it's them yet. Oops, I think I just deleted something. Okay, there we go. So figured out is probably the Ascians because reasons.
Always the Ascians.
Always the Ascians. So we journey to the frozen ruins of Garlemald to stop Van Daniel, because we figured out. They fail.
Garlemald had a bad day.
Garlemald had a bad day. Garlemald is in ruins because of what happened last expansion. So Garlemald is done. It's just bombed to hell. Like, it's pretty much destroyed. And
in its place, there's a giant tower.
Because Asians.
Reasons.
Because reasons and Asians. And Xenos Yagelbus. They failed to stop him from destroying the planetary seals holding the dark elder primal Zodiar captive inside the moon.
By using the tower.
By the way, this is where we get to go to the moon. And we find out...
Space!
We'll find out later how Zodiar got to the moon in the first place. Because they cover that later.
The moon isn't Daniel, real.
Yeah, the moon is real. The moon is a construct. Anyway. Van Daniel hijacks Zodiark's body because he can. Because he's an Asian. Intending to lose in battle against the Warrior of Light. So he planned to lose. He's like, I'm going to hijack your body. You're going to lose. And then you're going to die again. And then the Dark God's protective shield over the planet shatters. So he's like, oh, see, I did that on purpose. So I could destroy the shield and then actually destroy the world. So this triggers the official return of the final days. People's negative emotions and despair twist them into horrific, mindless monsters. So
because the whatever caused the final days can now see the world.
Yes.
That was a whole thing. That was one of the most iconic scenes where it's like, ah, there you are.
I found you. So,
and you as a player sitting there like, what the heck is this? Because it was out of nowhere. We had no idea.
Yeah, you have no idea at this point. Despite this being very a dark and depressing expansion, the cutscenes were epic. Like, so good.
So good.
So, we're trying to figure out the moon thing. There's the moon thing, Zodiark, Asians. We're talking to Heidelin. Heidelin keeps coming and talking to us.
And we find moon rabbits.
Moon rats.
Rabbits.
Yes.
Lolliput.
Yeah, Lolliput.
AKA Naming Way.
They are so cute. And they've never met humans or are people before. All they knew was the ancients. So everything is... So the ancients are way bigger than what we are. Think of them as like giants.
But we knew in the last expansion.
Yeah, so everything is like giant. And so the Lolliputs are these tiny little rabbits. And so they're making everything giant because that's what the ancients were. And then they meet us and they're like, whoa, you guys are small. and they're learning about our culture and everything. And we're learning about them. And they're teaching us a lot about the ancients and how the ancients lived. And it's a lot of learning. But then we realize, we're like, okay, so this is like the original Final Days. So we have to learn how they stopped the Final Days in the past so we could stop the Final Days now. And we actually travel back in time to Elpis, where it's a facility of the ancients. It's an ancient unsundered world.
Yeah, Elpis was like their one of their scientific research places.
But it was very... It was kind of like... I don't remember the name of the place. I've been playing 11, so I keep thinking Ceruta Bruta, but that's not it. It's outside of Gridania in 14 that I can't think of the name of.
Actually, it's closer to the place in Ishgard. The last zone in Ishgard.
I can't think of the name of that. But it's very magical. There's buildings and flowers, and it's very nice. Very unlike what our world is right now with the Final Days. So we go into the past, and in order for us to fit in with the ancients so we don't blow our cover, we're pretending to be, what was it, like a pet or something, an assistant of one of the ancients? Wasn't it like I don't remember. Fana? Wasn't it like her or I don't remember. So we're learning about what was that?
Are you talking about the bird girl?
I'm talking about us, because we were like undercover in Opus. We weren't supposed to let them know that we were from the future. Yeah. And so but I don't remember what we were. We were like a assistant or like one of their little pet people, because the ancients back then created life with magic.
Creation magic, yep.
Yeah, they had creation magic. So they basically
had a term for what they called them, and
I don't remember what it is.
I don't remember what it is either.
But it's basically creation magic. So they were creating like you could run across a Pegasus or a unicorn. They created that. Someone was all like, I want to create a unicorn. And they went and created a unicorn. And then they put it in an environment.
And they created a behemoth.
Yeah, they created a behemoth. And they would put it in an environment.
They were not always smart.
Yeah, they weren't always smart. And they went and it was very scientific. They like they wanted to research it. So they're like, okay, how does it act? What does it eat? How does it, you know, act around different animals? Like, they created all these species and then went and researched them to figure out if they could live amongst people or not, or what animals they couldn't live amongst. And so when we got there, we learned all of that about this. And they were like, oh, you're probably just one of their, you know, creation magic assistants. And we're like, yeah, that's totally what we are. And we had to hide like our ether and everything because we didn't have the same ether. What did they call it? They had a different kind of, it wasn't ether, but it was something else. We didn't have any of it.
I always played it like we had a similar spirit or something.
Yeah, it's kind of like ether, but they called it something else. So we were back in this world and we're meeting all these different people, all these different ancients and what they did and learning about their world. And so we meet the ancient scholars like Emmett Silk and Hylidaeus. I can't ever say that name. And Vana.
Theodophus?
Hylidaeus,
yes.
Yes. So Emmett Silk, which we've all come to love hate. He is his own person. Hylidaeus and Vana. And we all learn why the ancients dress in the robes and the masks and everything. And they all, that's just, they don't really see personal style, let's say. They all think that everyone should be equal. So they all wear the same thing. And then we meet that one of the scholars that is really high up with environment and creation magics has his own artificial entity type person bird, Meteon, which she's like a bird human thing, and she follows him around and she communicates with telepathically, because she doesn't have a lot of social skills or like language skills, and she's basically there to learn. And he's like, he created her, so he's also researching her, and it's like a whole thing. And she gets upset whenever he gets upset or when things get heated in the area. And then he's like, oh, you're upsetting her. Let's leave. But you like Meteon. You talk to Meteon, like you learn more about her and her story. And you don't notice at the time when you're going around doing all these quests with people, learning about the past and how they did things back then, and Meteon, and
she was also a creation made to with a ton of, and you eventually find out that she has sisters.
He does have sisters.
Lots of sisters.
So this next paragraph kind of jumps ahead really far, but I don't remember how the in betweens. But it's so we discover that the true culprit is Meteon. If you remember the in-betweens of this paragraph.
I do remember the in-betweens.
Thank you.
So as we're going through Alpis, we start discovering that, one night, a bunch of people saw Fandaniel like out on an island and sending a bunch of these blue lights up into space. And we eventually learned that the Meteons are all connected, and he sent a whole bunch of them out looking for life in the universe.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So, and Meteon finally gets like a response from her sisters and kind of starts freaking out because of the fact it is not the news Fandaniel wanted. And she eventually goes a little bit psycho. Fandaniel's trying to like protect her and everything, and we're chasing her. And finally, who's the one we all hate but love again?
Emmett Silk
finally, because Fandaniel gave them a specific directive. And then Emmett Silk is like, what if your question was wrong? Because how can she ask this question when she herself have also not lived?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
Because he was trying to find the meaning of life and sent out all of these Meteons to find life in other planets.
And ask them, how did they live?
How did they live? And what they found out, what Meteon and their sisters found out, was everyone died. And it was
for various reasons. Some of them were infighting amongst themselves.
It was like war or famine or just
disease. Society's just long gone.
Yeah, just everything's dead. And so she, instead of learning about the meaning of life or like how they lived or why they died, she became so absorbed in the immense grief of death, sorrow, and dying civilizations across the universe that she just kind of went psycho. She was overwhelmed by despair and then decided that the kindest thing to do for the human race, we're basically quote unquote the human race, is to just make sure everyone dies, like now. And she vows to sing the Song of Oblivion until all life dies, because she thinks that's the kindest thing to do, because everyone either dies from disease or hunger or is killed or there's war or, you know, whatever.
All of the above. Yeah. And Fandaniel's, of course, trying to protect her, the Meteon that's still with him all this time. And you chase him up another giant tower. The game really loves its towers.
It's all about towers in this game.
That's Final Fantasy in a nutshell. I know, lots, right? Lots of towers.
All the towers.
Yeah, and so we get to the tower. We fight Fandaniel. We kick his ass again. I mean, how many times do we have to kick his ass? Because we find,
right?
Because before this point, we had found out that at one point Fandaniel was Amon. So we've kicked his ass as Amon. We've kicked his ass when he tried to take over Zodiark. We've kicked his ass when he's just him. I mean, we have kicked his ass so many times. And the last Meteon goes to join her sisters. And when she goes off to join her sisters, that's when she actually meets up with them, is when they start the final days. Of course, and unfortunately, he has the ability to sort of erase. To manipulate memories. And so he manipulated like three of the four people there, or two of the four people there, to forget what happened. Which was,
yeah, because we found out what happened. And so in order to save Meteon, he erased even Emmett Selk's memories of what happened, so they couldn't do anything. So they wouldn't harm Meteon, because he didn't want them to hurt her.
Yeah. And then the only people who survived it are you and Vidal, who managed to break out of the spatial time or spatial confined area that we're in. So Vidal vows to try and stop it, and basically it's a time paradox. If we hadn't gone to the past to actually do this, they wouldn't have even stopped the final days to begin with by summoning Zodiark.
It's real fun brain noodling.
Brain noodles.
Brain noodles. It's real fun brain noodles.
It seems like a stable time paradox where the thing goes back in the past and caught. How do I. Back to the Future. That's considered a stable.
Yeah, it's kind of like Back to the Future.
stable time loop.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is stable time. So even though there's time paradoxes, it's actually a stable one.
So back in the present, so this is all going on in Elpis. We're still over there. But back in the present, we return to the present. The Scions discover that the isolated nation of Old Charlian has built a massive starship. And this has been super secret from the Scions. And it's built by Alphano and Alice's dad?
Yes.
Yes. They were trying so hard to get to the bottom of what they were doing, and they really didn't want the Scions to know.
Yeah. And the reason they were building this was so we could go to the moon and escape on the moon, because the moon is supposed to be like an intergalactic huge spaceship that we were all supposed to live in and flee the planet if the final days came.
Yes. So they built...
piloted by rabbits.
Yes. So they built the Ragnarok intended to evacuate a portion of humanity to safety, because they can't save everyone.
Yeah, but it's not finished. So to get it finished, all the different factions and people we've interacted with and helped all donated materials and stuff to be used to help
and finish knowledge it. And everything. Yeah, because once they finally let the Scions in on the big secret, this is not going to happen in time. We have to ask the Scions for help. And that's when we're all like, we got you.
Yeah, even the dragons helped.
Yeah, we had a lot of different races and factions that you haven't seen in a bit are showing up and hey, I got this one material, or hey, I got this knowledge or tools or whatever.
And it's powered by all the Edelons that we have met over the years and kicked the asses of.
We learned that the Loprits were actually put there on the moon to recreate all of this stuff during the Ancients' final days. Because they were like, oh yeah, this is going to probably happen again. Let's create this thing to save people. And it did happen again. And we had a place to go because Hydaelyn knew it was going to happen again. And did all these things in preparation for it. Which is just all like, oh dang, she knew. So, but we still don't know who Hydaelyn was at this point. So
yeah, because we find out about the Ragnarok first.
First. And we know that Hydaelyn did a thing, whatever, but we're like, oh my gosh, Hydaelyn knew and saved us, and she knows it's going to happen again, so she did the thing. Yeah. So
after we find out about the Ragnarok and do all that, we actually have to secure a power source for it, which the only power source we can think of is, the Mother Crystal.
The Mother Crystal, which is Hydaelyn. Dun, dun, dun.
So we actually go down into the whatever it's called. I can't think of the name now. There's a specific name for that place.
Yeah, but I can't think of the name of it. It's the other word they use, but I can't think of it.
Yeah. But we go down to retrieve the Mother Crystal, and as we're going down, we find out that this whole thing is also part of the cycle of rebirth that is the world. Because once people die, their souls actually go back into the ether to eventually be reborn. And guess who's asked me to get a kick again?
Yeah!
Van Daniels! So this guy has not lost to us once, not lost to us twice, not lost to us three times. He gets his ass beat four times by us.
Yes, he does not know when to give up, this guy. Yeah.
And in fact, there's a meme out there that says the whole story of Final Fantasy XIV is one guy's fuck up.
Yep. Yep.
We kick him on his butt again, and then we get to the Mother Crystal, and we find out we actually meet Hydaelyn.
Yes, Actual
Hydaelyn, who's a Edelon that was created by Vida.
Yes, Vanah.
It is Vida.
Vanah is Hydaelyn,
but she's sexy.
She is mom.
Sorry, Hydaelyn was hot.
She is mom. Vanah is mom. And when I was at FanFest, there was a lot of Hydaelyn Vanah's cosplay. And everyone was all like, mom! Because she's basically mom.
She's basically mom.
So she's So she's all like, yep, I become Heidelin to combat Zodiark. And there's like this whole story where all the ancients were like, if we summon Zodiark, he's going to save us. But in order to summon Zodiark, we have to, a large portion of our population has to die. And she was like, no, don't do that. There's another way. And everyone was so scared and freaked out and panicking that they were like not listening to her at all. Yeah. And so
unfortunately,
there's like,
some of that had to do with the fact that like Emmett Selk and Hyphlodeus, who were two of the, you know, although Hyphlodeus was not one of the 13, he was still fairly, he had a lot of influence.
Yeah, the complication was the, they were like basically the ruling government type thing. And they were like, well, whatever we say goes. So it was basically them. And then some of them died. So it was just like three of them left or something like that. And there's a really long cutscene about the end of days from the ancients' perspective, what happened for them, which is really powerful. And it's basically Vinod trying to save people and trying to, you know, get them to not bow to Zodiark.
But of course, as we know, the way, if a certain way you summon them, the Edelons have the power to influence those who are underneath them. So they all became thralls.
Yes. And so she basically was like, all right, basically F this, I'm going to become a rival, like opposite type goddess to Zodiark. And she becomes
a counter.
Yeah, a counter. That's the word. She becomes like a counter to Zodiark and becomes Heidelin.
And cuts Zodiark into 13 pieces,
which is also how we ended up with the sundering of the world into the 13 charts.
Exactly. It's this part of the story that really blows my mind. And I was like, this explains so much. Like, it's just like crazy because you go to all of, in past expand like Shadowbringers, we went to another shard. Like, it's just crazy that now in an Endwalker, it explains how we have 13 shards. She basically is walking, Heidelin is walking with you through time and space itself. As you're the warrior of light, and you're basically Heidelin's like vessel type thing, I guess. That's why I call her mom, because she's basically like the beginning, and you're her warrior of light.
So from story perspective, because the game has not specifically said this, however, it has been very, very heavily implied that basically we are the sundered soul of the person who took Vidal's place on the Council of 13.
Yes.
So that is our connection specifically to Vidal, because that person, whatever their name was in the past, was like a good friend and disciple of Vidal before she stepped down and then became Vidal's replacement on the Council of 13. And the funny thing is like that person was known as like a traveler, would travel around kind of sticking their nose in everyone's business, which is kind of what we do.
Basically, we are the Warrior of Light with the Scions who do travel around and stick their noses in everyone's business. But
as an adventurer does.
Yes. But in order for Heidelin to really trust us, like she's been with us this whole time, but she's all like, you know, I really need to test your resolve with stopping the final days for your world. And so you actually fight Heidelin.
The one fight I did not want to do in that game.
I know. It's like the one thing you don't want to fight is Heidelin, because she's like your mom, like the god that's been with you this entire time and has helped you and given you the echo, and now you have to fight her and you're like, I don't want to.
I mean, you don't kill her, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Spoilers.
I mean, this is backtrack.
It is backtrack. But yes, you do. It is an actual fight.
It's a hard fight, too.
It's a really hard fight. And
it was also one of the first fights where you could actually use the NPCs to fight it.
Yeah, I tried doing the NPCs with it, and I could not. I had to actually have help with people.
It took me a few tries, but I was able to do it. With NPCs? I will say Ishtola killed me twice.
Oh, that sounds like Ishtola.
Yeah, although Ishtola is actually the person to best follow in that fight because of her, you know, how she sees the world.
Yes.
She actually, except for one very specific mechanic, which is what was killing me, she can actually avoid everything. It's an ability that hits every player. So, like, if you stack with her, it's hitting her and you twice.
Yeah. I just basically followed her around when I tried it. But I tried it a couple times. And
it's still a hard fight, yeah.
It's still really hard, so I ended up doing it with some friends. But when you do defeat her, she passes on her remaining power to the Scions.
And the crystal.
And the crystal. Entrusting them to choose the path of hope over flight. So she tests you and wants to make sure that you choose the right path that she wants you to choose. So instead of fleeing to the moon, she had that set up anyway, just in case, because she loves her children. But she really hopes that you choose the path of hope where you could actually stop it and not have to flee. So instead of evacuating, the Scions upgrade the Ragnarok to fly to the very edge of the universe to defeat Meteon.
Fly to space!
So instead of using it to save people, we're like, we're going to hijack this Ragnarok because we can stop this. And because the Ragnarok's the only ship that can make it to the edge of the universe. And if we can, didn't they build like some kind of Meteon tracker thingy?
No. So when you ended up encountering Vidal and Fandaniel in the past, Vidal actually managed to tag, and this was part of the reason why we had to go and speak to Heidelin, actually tagged Meteon with a tracking spell, basically.
That's right. Yeah. See, you look back on it and you're like, damn, Vidal was so smart. She knew things.
I mean, honestly, that's just a good idea. It's like,
I don't trust this Meteon. I'm just gonna pull up.
Well, it was when Meteon was trying to escape. So I mean, this was well after Meteon was running.
Yeah,
because Meteon ran because she was scared.
Yes, that's right, and that's why people like the cosplay of Meteon, because like you like Meteon before she went crazy, and I mean I still kind of feel bad for Meteon because she didn't understand what was being asked of her, and she was overwhelmed with despair once she figured it out.
Yeah, I mean, well, again, that was what Emmett Selk had said, is that Meteon, you know, can't understand this because Meteon has never truly lived.
Exactly. Also, Emmett Selk.
So literally, everything is Fandaniel's fault.
Yes. And then you see Emmett Selk in Elpis, and you're like, dang, he looks different. And then you see Emmett Selk out of Elpis, and you're like, all right, yeah, time. Okay, these things happen to your face.
So we chase Meteon to what is called Ultima Thule.
Yes. Which a is manifestation like of dead worlds constructed by Meteon's despair.
Yeah. And it's interesting because two of the dead worlds that we run across, we've actually encountered, sort of. So the first dead world is actually based on the dragon's world. So apparently, because again, these were dead worlds that Meteon had encountered. So one of them was she encountered the dragon's world at one point and saw them. So the big thing with the dragon's world is the race that Omega was from had actually gone there and waged war, because their whole premise was a computer system that basically they didn't want to be attacked. So they turned themselves into robots and made themselves powerful enough to go attack worlds that would attack them, you know, for safety, basically. And then it started going after anything that was stronger than them. Well, the dragons being stronger, so they waged war on the dragons, and that's what actually Midgar Sarmers was like, this world's doomed, I'm out of here, and took his baby eggs.
Yeah, so that's how Midgard Swarmer came to our world. That's where the dragons, how the dragons got to our world, basically.
Yeah, and that's why we, and so we get to see like the dying breath, you know, from Metion's perspective, the dying breath of the dragon world through this. The next world has a race we've never seen before called the EA. It was sort of a weird deserty world where they would die and then like encapsulate themselves into memory stones, I want to say.
Yeah, they're kind of like memory stones, yeah.
The EA were kind of weird.
Yeah, they were kind of, they were really sad because when you talk, you do like a couple side quests with them. You talk to them, you know, learn their stories and about, and they're just like little ghosty people that just kind of float around.
Based on one of the Flan models, by the way.
Yeah.
But that was sort of their spiel, and they were also kind of they had a quest that had 40 that involved 42, by the way.
Yep.
Funny. Yeah.
And then the last world was actually the one with the Omnicron. I think it was the Omnicron.
Was that the robot people?
Yeah, the race that made Omega. They were the race that made Omega.
Yeah, they basically, through time, kept replacing their body parts and things with mechanical parts until they all just became robots.
Yeah, and they and again, the premise, as I mentioned before, was that their society was based on a computer, you know, because they got tired of being attacked. They got tired of being, you know, weak and whatnot. So they made a computer that made the analysis that, oh, if we attack them, they can't attack us. So that's how they started their intergalactic war crimes.
And they eventually regretted what they did.
No.
They were like, am I thinking of a different race?
I'm not sure if you're thinking of, one of the ones from the dungeon, I think. The issue with the robots is they built this computer to tell them the next target, and the very last target they went after were the dragons, which were like the most powerful beings in the universe.
That's right,
And when they beat the dragons, the robot, their big computer AI system that told them where to go and what to fight next, couldn't find any. There was basically nothing else left that could challenge them. So it just basically kind of stopped caring. And so now this plan that had basically been full, you know, everyone's been turned into robots and whatnot, they were basically stuck in a sense of stagnation because they had built their whole society had become this means to an end of, you know, not being attacked. And now there was nothing out there that could attack them but themselves, basically. But they didn't start war with themselves. They just end up in stagnation.
Yeah, well, that's... I remember one of the quests where one of them were like, they wish they... Because they became so obsessed with it that they couldn't stop. And then after it became stagnant, they just, like, they couldn't die, basically. Because they were all robots.
Yeah.
So they were just all like, well, what do? We just don't do anything. They are basically just standing around as robots and doing nothing until they all just kind of, that one was really sad.
As I said, stagnation. That is a society of stagnation where they can't do anything, so they just do nothing.
Yeah.
And then, so we're finding out about all these things, but we're still determined to face Metion and be like, no, life is still worth it. Whether it's ups or downs, life is still worth it. And so we actually go up to her, and through this journey through Ultima Thule, your companions are slowly disappearing, like, you know, to either allow for to go through or whatnot. And at the end, we're like the last one left because everyone else is like the way.
They had to, the Scions had to sacrifice their physical forms one by as far as we get. One by one, they had to sacrifice their physical forms to pave the pathway. Because of the overwhelming negative energy. So so often one of the Scions disappears until you're the last one and you reach the center alone to face Medion's ultimate form, the Endsinger, which is another whole raid dungeon situation, which was also really hard.
Yeah, so the dungeon has you going through three more worlds that Metion encountered. One of them was like a polluted water world, or a water world that had become so polluted that it was actually turning its inhabitants into like biological weapons. The second world was another not mechanized world, but sort of mech-y world, where two different factions were warring with each other, and at the end, at the end of it, you basically see like one person who's firing nukes basically at an enemy fortification, and he realizes that he's basically the only one left alive on his world.
Yeah.
And the third world, trying to think which one was the third world.
I don't remember. You gotta fill in my holes, Tam. Don't take that out of context.
Oh, the third world was the one where everyone sort of gave themselves to death as the ultimate bliss.
That's right.
Yeah. And they actually had this creature that would go around and like kill them, and they would become like gold moths.
Yeah, it was really weird.
People are weird. I mean, look at our world.
So, yeah, so you're basically getting through all of this negative, depressing energy that Metion has gone through herself and has become the Endsinger. And so you go through all this, and then after that, in an unexpected twist, guess who arrives?
Yeah, Emmett Selk and Hiflodeus arrive, and Emmett Selk is like, because since he's now like died, his soul's working on reincarnating, so he remembers everything that he forgot when he first encountered for Daniel. He kind of like to believe that you'd remember and I'd be the one to forget.
Yes, this is such a. Like, as depressing as this expansion is, the more I talk about it, the more I'm all like, oh my god, this expansion is so good.
Yeah,
I mean, depressing stories can be good.
Yeah.
The lowest point in the expansion, I believe, was the fight with Heidelin. I think that was, like, the lowest point it got.
Yeah, because
she was... As a player,
because she is based... You've basically been with Heidelin this entire time.
Mm-hmm.
The entire game itself. Yeah. So, and Xenos arrives. Right? Is this after?
No, now we actually start fighting in the Endsinger.
Right.
And she is throwing planets at you.
Yeah, she literally throws planets at you. No joke.
Yeah. And then, like, midway through the fight, things are sort of sideways-ish, and, but there's a prayer, and like we fight her, and we actually, and you win, and that's when we beat her, but we're now stuck in space.
Yeah, we're just like in space.
Oh, so. Actually, no, you're right. So as we're fighting, because we're fighting the Endsinger on Xenos's back because he took over.
Oh yeah, Xenos has transformed himself into Shinryu, the dragon,
and is helping you.
And he decides to help you. Yes. Because he wants to duel you.
So after he's beat her.
So he's like gonna help you beat her so he can duel you.
So
yeah, there's a lot of issues. But it's really fun to fight the Endsinger on the back of Shinryu, and then you destroy the Endsinger together. Restoring hope and reviving the fallen scions. Yay!
No, I think that part already happened.
Yeah, but you still have to fight Xenos again.
Yeah, we still have to fight Xenos.
So he... Everything's saved. The universe is saved. The end of days or whatever are stopped. It's cool. Everything's cool. So Xenos is all like, alright, now let's get to our duel. And it's a purely personal duel. No stakes other than survival. And we end up defeating him. That's and he dies satisfied because finally he gets to die by the Warrior of Light. And didn't we see Emmett Selk at this time too? I don't remember. But we go
I think
back.
Emmett Selk. I think you're right. I think it was Emmett Selk and like Hyphlodeus to kind of help us.
Oh right, you know, they kind of help us with Xenos, right? They were all like kind of there.
No, they help us go back home.
Oh right, they do. So yeah, we're stuck in space, and they come back. Their spirits come back, and they help us get home. And the you know the threat of the Ascians is permanently resolved. And the Scions quietly disband to pursue their own separate adventures. Basically, they're like, they promised the Sharlayan government thing that, like, if we do this, if we help you with the Ragnarok and whatnot, we would disband because his dad hates him, hates the Scions or whatever. And plus, we kind of stole the Ragnarok, so doesn't look great on the Scions. but in a heartwarming little thing, Alphano and Alizé get some daddy issues resolved, and some mommy and daddy issues get resolved, and then all the Scions decide that they want to pursue other things. And you see Thancred and Dragon Boy. What's his name? Arion? No, not Arion J. Oh, is it? Is it Thancred and Arianche? Don't they go off together to do treasure searches or whatever? They go off doing their own thing. Dragon Boy does his thing. You know, Graha does his thing. And, you know, I marry Graha to you. It's fine. We live a happy life together. And then Ishtola is seen with her mom. Was it her mom? No, it wasn't her mom. It was, what's her face's mom?
Well, Ishtola goes to try and find a way to get back to the 13th.
Oh, right. She tried to go. She tries to figure out how to get back to the 13th shard because, you know, her boyfriend, Runar.
I thought she also doesn't have a thing going on with Orianche. It's weird.
I mean, it's a, who doesn't want to have a thing with Ishtola, honestly? As a straight woman, I would be gay for her. Just saying.
Same.
Yes. But don't we meet someone's mom at the end? Who did someone's mom, like the lady who died or whatever, and we meet her mom? I'm trying to remember who that was.
We meet a lot of people's moms.
I know, but it was like a really important cutscene, and it was like, or am I thinking that, or am I getting confused with the end of Shadowbringers?
It's been...
It was like Graha, and they were all having tea, and then they met the mom. I think that was in the Shadowbringers because they were all like...
Yeah, the tea thing like, was Shadowbringers.
Okay, then I'm thinking of Shadowbringers.
Yeah, because that's when Graha shows up.
Yeah, because that's when Graha comes back and is all like, what do I do now? And they were like, join the Scions! And also marry the Warrior of Light. Okay, thanks. Anyway. yeah, so that's when the Scions decide to disband to pursue their own adventures, goals. Own goals, because we had saved the world and stopped the end of days, and we've been through a lot. We defeated our mom. We killed our mom. It was sad. And we were like, all right, this is it. We're done now. War of Light, you as a player decide to just continue adventuring as one does. But
yeah, and so one of the things that Emmett Selk tells us, though, is that, you know, and the devs actually had to come out and say this too, is yeah, you may have a spaceship, but there's still a lot more on Eorzea or on the planet that we're on that has yet to be explored. And Emmett Selk comes out and is like, have you seen this? Have you seen this? Have you heard about this? And so that's so that leads into some of the post chapter stuff, where we actually find the one of the things he mentions is treasures below particular ocean, which we actually do find. And we actually find out that it's been known about. It was a secret stash, but it also held the secret a void gate that went actually to the World of Darkness, which is, I think, what, the 13th shard, the one that got destroyed? Is it the
13th?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just can't remember which one was, if it was.
I can't remember which shard, which specific shard it was, but yeah,
I think it's the 13th.
To the World of Darkness. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we actually go there, and we meet Zero, and it is the most Final Fantasy IV thing ever.
I haven't played IV, but apparently it's very IV-ish.
Oh, it is very IV-ish. It's like the music is. Like the music and the names and a lot of it, and like the bosses are all from Final Fantasy IV. Everything is from Final Fantasy IV on that one.
Even the weird moon music?
No, that was on the moon.
Oh, darn.
Oh, yeah. Speaking of moon stuff, in Endwalker, you can go up to the moon anytime you want and mine. There's like moon missions.
Yep. The Laparettes are one of your tribes to work with.
Yeah. They become one of the tribes and they have 1,000 quests. Like, I'm a completionist who likes to do all of the side quests. There's so much side quests in Endwalker. It's
ridiculous. One of the quest chains too has you starting a bar at the end of the world.
Yep, that was a good one. That was probably my favorite quest, was when you started a bar at the end of the world.
In Ultima Thule.
Yep, in Ultima Thule. And you're there like, yeah, this will be a good place for a bar. Start up a bar. With all the ghosts and dead people and robots. It's great.
So. Sounds amazing.
It's great.
You also get like a jellyfish type of mount.
Yeah.
A space jellyfish mount.
It's jellyfish.
I'm thinking here.
Thinking is hard.
Yeah, so we go back and forth between like our world and the 13th shard. And mess with all that, and we actually, you know, because this is a whole thing where they're trying to invade the 13th realm, which is the dead world, is trying to invade ours for its aether, you know, because that's how they feed. They even feed on each other's aether. They're very cannibalistic.
Yeah. I don't remember how we meet Zero. We end up.
I think she saved us.
Yeah, she. Yeah, I think she saved us.
But yeah, I mean that, and so that's one of the two plot lines is stopping that, and then near the end of the Endwalker, I'm summarizing because of the fact we're starting to get the current expansion. I've heard really good things about like some of the current patches, but I dipped out of Dawn Trail.
Oh, see, I liked it. It wasn't. As good as Endwalker, but it was still pretty. It wasn't bad. It was better than Stormblood, which is stupid.
Yeah. Well, I've dipped out. I just right after the second trial boss. But anyways, and then we start. So once we resolve the whole stuff with the 13th and be like, oh, there may be ways to actually save the 13th and stuff like that. We actually end up going to a meeting with one of the candidates to be the ruler of nation to be as our next companion, which is Wook Lamott, the
female Hrothgar.
Female Hrothgar, yes, thank you. I was about to say Ronso, because they're the same race, technically.
Yeah they are.
No, not. I mean, they are. There's different shards call them different things. So the Ronso are indeed Hrothgar.
Don't the Ronso have horns?
Some of the Hrothgar have horns.
Okay, I wasn't aware
of that. It's in the character creation, you can have horns, I think.
Yeah.
I tried to make one once, and I didn't like it.
I loved it, because I am full kitty. I am girl cat, not cat girl.
Well, I tried to make a girl cat, but the colors, the specific color combinations and stuff like that, it was very limited, and I didn't have the things that I wanted. It wasn't It's not like the Mikote, where you could pretty much pick almost any color you want to be put anywhere. The female Hrothgar, like girl cat, like it's very like fur color is this specific palette and this pattern is this specific palette, and you can't like interchange them.
Yeah, it was annoying.
Yeah, it was annoying, and I was just like, all right, I'm not going to be a girl cat. I'll just be a cat girl then. But I hear that in some coming updates, I think they're updating that a bit to give more. Yeah.
But that's next.
Color choices.
That's next expansion. So yeah. we start working with her towards this trial that she's going through to basically prove that she is worthy of being the successor of her quote unquote dad.
Yes.
And I had heard that was a very polarizing character.
The whole expansion is polarizing.
Oh, okay. I didn't. Yeah, it's basically one of those: you love it or you hate it, or you like it. Basically, you like it, you love it, or you hate it. There's no middle ground. I didn't mind it. A lot of people didn't like it.
I didn't not like it, but I also did not like it. I just did not enjoy it.
It was way better than Stormblood. So
Stormblood was boring.
Stormblood was boring. It needs to die in a fire, but so does Lys. But that's
other
things.
So the reason I'm not talking about the trial, the because there's usually like a trial series of bosses of raids is because of the fact that's actually part of the main story in this one, because they were the four elemental fiends that served Golbez during the main story quest. Two of them, and then there were other ones that were associated with that, like Zeromus. We fought with Zeromus. The other two were Barbaricia and Rubicante were the two we fought.
Right.
There was also what was the raid? Then we had the two raid stories. One of which was another thing Emmett Selk had talked to us about, which was the you don't know the true story behind the. You know, your gods. And so that was actually one of the storylines where we actually met the gods, and they were indeed Asians, or not Asians, but ancients, who then became the gods that we worshipped. And they were one of the fail-safe devices for that Heidelin had put into place. They were all followers of Heidelin, or Vidal, really.
Yeah.
And then that was a really good raid series. I really enjoyed that raid series. And then, what was the normal raid, though? I have to look that up.
So, all in all, good expansion?
It's a very good expansion in the beginning. It sort of starts, the Final Fantasy IV stuff was really good. It really starts falling off right near the end as we start going into Dawn Trail. Because, again, Dawn Trail is a very polarizing expansion, and although better than Stormblood, some put it right down near the bottom.
I would probably agree with that.
How much do you chalk that up to the last two expansions being so good that they had to tank somewhat at some point?
I think some of it is because of the fact this is all lead into the next like main story arc.
Mm-hmm.
So unfortunately, we're dealing with that right now.
Yeah. So. It was, I think that's because, you know, Shadowbringers and Endwalker were the two ending arcs, pretty much. And then they had a new writer for Dawn Trail. And it was a brand new story, you know, supposed to be more of like a happy vacation. As what Yoshi P said, I think, in one of the press conferences, I think, was... Because it's been the last two expansions have been so heavy. On your emotions that he wanted a lighter, like vacation-y breather expansion.
And that makes sense.
Yeah.
Only for like the first half. The second half gets back into heavy.
I mean, well, yeah, you gotta have your breather, and then you're gonna have to go back into it like Final Fantasy does.
Oh, the normal raid series was Pandemonium, which was basically a jail built by the ancients to house very nasty creations, and you find out that it was being manipulated for other uses.
Yes.
Pandemonium referencing Final Fantasy II,
no.
I believe.
No.
Are you sure?
Yes.
There's a dungeon called Pandemonium.
No, there is. They are not related at all. There is no relation in this case.
I just figured it was called that as an homage.
No, I mean, it could have been.
It could have been, but it's very, it would be very, very loose.
Name only, probably.
Yeah, I mean, Pandemonium is not an uncommon name for, like, a jail, per se.
Yeah, I'm just saying that Final Fantasy, or this game tends to reference old school Final Fantasy a lot.
It does a lot. Like the dungeon that we first meet Zero in is called Troia Castle, and it even has a remixed version of the Troia Castle theme. I think it's one of the best remixed songs in the game. I don't know if you put that one in the list there, Noodle, for Platy, but
I didn't. I did. I think I put Smile in there.
Okay. Yeah, but no, I don't think this one was in any way a reference to the old Pandemonium at all.
Yeah.
Sorry to burst your bubble.
Name only.
Well, that being said, are we ready for the roundtable, or do we have anything else we would want to add?
I think roundtable is a good next step.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okie dokie. Let's take a brief musical interlude and come back with the roundtable and put a bow on this. Welcome back to RPG Backtrack, where we are now doing the roundtable. Our personal thoughts, our feelings, our favorites, our least favorites. I always have to ask, did you guys have a favorite moment in the game?
It's not really a funny moment, but like the moment that sticks out in my head when I think of Endwalker is one of the quests. I forget the name of the town we were in. It was the town with the elephants, and it was like the final day, the fireballs were happening with the tower, and everyone was running around, and you're doing this quest, and you're doing this cutscene or whatever, and one of the, I forget the name of the race, but they're like elephant people.
Mm-hmm.
And
wasn't it like the Majita or something?
Yeah. And I was like the woman elephant, I think, was trying to save a baby and was running
Matanga.
Down. What was it?
Matanga.
Matanga, that's right. Matanga. Yeah, she was running down the road, dodging, you know, all of these, like, balls of fire and crap, and she was, like, trying to save this baby, and she was running, and I think she ended up, like, I think the baby made it, but she didn't. It was a really sad quest, but like I just it's burned into my head of the Matanga running to save this child, and then they end up saving the child, but then she ends up passing away or something like that.
Yeah, that would have made me cry.
Yeah, that's definitely has like burned into my memory when I think of Endwalker. I just think of that one quest.
Is there a happier quest to your life?
Is there a happier quest? This expansion isn't really all that happy, but
okay.
I did really like being in Elpis. Elpis was just really pretty, and they had unicorns and pegasuses, so I enjoyed seeing those. Those made me happy.
What about you, Tim?
My personal favorite was getting to the end of the Alliance Raid series with the gods, and I mean, there's a lot of emotional points, but I really cried at the end of that.
Oh,
the first time
same.
I went through it.
I cried a lot of different points.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of really good moments in this one. I was actually a big fan of the Troia Castle. I will admit, I farmed that religiously trying to get the music to drop for my jukebox.
Oh yeah, that was a good. I liked that the Dead World with.
Well, as a big fan of Final Fantasy IV, Troia is one of my favorite tracks in Final Fantasy IV, and this remix is so good, but it's also very somber, and I just really really enjoyed it.
And one of my favorite parts of the expansion was the end when you're watching the whole cutscene with Vana turning into Heidelin, and she's walking on this space path, and you see all the bubbles coming past her of different events that have happened in to you as a player in past expansions. And the further she goes down the path, the more beat up, the more wary, the more kind of deadish she's looking, with because she's followed you for so long that she's like dragging her sword and just limping along. And that whole thing is just like really powerful.
Yeah, I like it when media like this kind of reflects on its past. I don't know why. I guess I'm just a sucker for nostalgia like that.
Yeah.
And then seeing how far you've come as a character.
I also really like that.
Speaking of characters, do we have any favorite characters?
Vana. And Grahatia, of course.
Space Mommy?
Space Mommy.
No, Crystal Mommy.
Oh, Crystal Mommy. Gotcha.
She's also Space Mommy.
But she never went to space.
Technically, she did. She is a god.
But she's only a god because she was Vada, but Vada never went to space. Therefore,
Vana never went to space, but Vana became a god. So technically, yes, she did go to space.
We don't know that. Although she did make the Loparet, so she at least went, she made a moon. You know what? I'll give it to you. She made a moon.
She made a moon.
She made a moon.
She made the Loparets.
I love the Loparets. If anything is funny about this game, it is the Loparets.
And how they all have names that end in way.
Yeah, they are the official name. They are the naming ways.
Yeah, there is. Ways. Yeah, there's always a way.
Yeah, they are a way. And they have one of the most amusing dungeons.
They do.
So, going back to what you said earlier about them, you know, being like, oh my god, you're so small. And they start this, like, emergency reconstruction of the habitat zone.
Yes. They thought we were all ancient size, but we're like half the size of ancients, at least. And they're like oh star. No!
Like a third, not even a half, like a third.
Yeah, we're like a third of the size of ancients, and they're like, oh no, we've made a terrible mistake. We didn't know.
Yeah, so they start, and the machine actually goes bonkers.
Yeah.
And you actually have to go into their habitat zone, which, by the way, is another Final Fantasy IV reference with the face on the moon, because it's inside the face on the moon.
It is.
And you actually have to go through this like whole thing to go beat up their machine that is trying to redo the reconstruction zone.
That's funny.
There's a lot of moon stuff shenanigans that are really fun.
Yeah,
I really want to get to this expansion at some point because it just sounded really fun. I just need more time.
You can do it. I used to be always behind expansions by like a year and a half until I started going to FanFest and I realized that I really need to be current on what's happening in the game to enjoy the FanFests.
Yeah, no, it's just I've always got too many irons in the fire and I like to be playing more current stuff for RPG cast.
Yes.
You know, so I can talk about the newest games and whatnot.
Which makes sense. Yeah.
But did you guys have a favorite quest?
Favorite quest.
That is a hard one.
Yeah, because Endwalker was really quest heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And everything. I mean, and the problem with the favorite quest, quest question is like the zone. So the way the zones are set up in Final Fantasy XIV is, you have like little areas where the quests all correlate to each other. But then once you complete all the quests in the area as a whole, you unlock like one final quest that sort of wraps up the entire area.
Mm-hmm.
So favorite quests are difficult.
Yeah, because of all that interconnection between quests.
Yeah, that kind of makes sense.
I personally will say I enjoyed the Garlemald quest the most because it's them. It's sort of two things. One is them trying to rebuild after Xenos basically destroyed their whole way of life.
Yeah.
And then B, them also, because the reason Garlemald hates everybody is because they were outcast. Like everybody basically ridiculed them because of the fact they couldn't manipulate Aether. So that's how come they kind of hate everybody. And some of it is them now realizing that not everybody is like bad and against us per se.
Yeah.
So they're still wary, but they have become more accepting of people with Aether because not everybody is trying to like drive them from their homes anymore like they used to.
Yeah. So it's kind of interesting with the Garleans starting to trust outsiders, because it's like, hey, we're here to help you, and they're like, I don't trust you, you guys are awful people. And then like
some of them even go out of their way to kill themselves after they meet you.
Yeah.
Oh,
or like harsh. if they got help from you, they feel so guilty about it that they just they can't live with it. Like it's been ingrained in their lives so hard that they can't handle it. So it's either starve to death or accept help from, you know, your mortal enemy, basically. So they end up just killing themselves.
That's a little harsh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes. Like I said, this expansion is full of depression.
So did you guys have any memories tied to this game at all?
I just remember crying a lot.
I remember getting into the playtest for it.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. We have an article on the website from me about it.
Go visit rpgamer.com.
Is Square not as generous with the beta codes as
It wasn't a bit. Well, again, so when they do the playtest for this, it's a live playtest where they gather people in a room usually.
Yeah, you don't get like a key code or something.
Okay.
Yeah. And because it was COVID, that's how they sort of they did it. Unfortunately, last year, because COVID wasn't a thing, it was again once more a live play test. So, which was in San Francisco, I want to say. So I wasn't able to go.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because that's where their office is.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I was a little sad that I couldn't participate and do another write up because of the fact, you know, you had to go be in San Diego to go to the play test.
I think what was it? I think RP Gamer was invited to one of these things, but
we don't have the people nearby.
Yeah, I remember Severin asking me, and I was all like, literally can't. Would totally go if I could, but because I think I'm like the closest person to San Francisco on staff, but
I think it's you and me, because like for me it's a straight drive across like I-40.
I'm like straight north. So,
yeah, and I'm straight east.
Yeah,
literally.
It's just
a matter. It's a long drive.
Yeah, I wish I could have gone, but couldn't. But FanFest was real fun. It was in Anaheim, close to. I flew into San Francisco, so I was there for that. If only the playtest happened at the same time.
Yeah, I think part of it too with the playtest is
the fact that
We tend to have more notice about when FanFest is.
Yeah.
So it's easier to make, like, arrangements to go.
That was my problem, is that I couldn't arrange the time or the money to go down there.
Okie dokie.
Yeah. Well, depression!
That sounds like a podcast. And MMO month is officially over since Matt's back, but not back on the podcast right now. I think he passed out.
I think he fell asleep.
I think he definitely fell back asleep. Watch him be up at 3 a.m. again.
So, oh, poor guy.
I've done that where I've fallen asleep for a few hours and it's like, oh, it's 2 a.m. I'm going to be up all bloody night.
When I got back from Japan, I got home at like 4 in the afternoon after ding up for like 24 hours straight, and woke up at midnight let the dog out, and then slept for another 3 hours, and then was up pinging at 4 in the morning at that point. Did I say 3 or 4 hours? A handful of hours.
Some amount of hours.
Yeah, and it was the weirdest sensation I had ever felt, because it was like, I am so tired, but it is in the middle of the day, but I literally cannot move. And then, you know, you hit the sleep threshold, and then it's the opposite. It's like you couldn't go to sleep if somebody paid you.
That was like, I know, that was like when I flew from Seattle to Germany. We had a layover in Newark, and then Newark to Frankfurt, and I did not sleep at all. And it's so weird. It's like you're floating, you know? So I get it.
Yeah, I love going to Japan, but the massive flight and the 14-hour time difference kind of sucked.
Yeah, it's too. It's hard.
But we will be going to Japan for our next show, as in Tokyo, because we are talking about the original Persona games, 1 and 2, the games that everybody, including Atlas, seems to have forgotten. Because they've done nothing but the Persona 3 formula for the past 20 years.
I only got into Persona when Persona 4 came out?
And
I like this game. This game is cool.
I don't mind the modern Persona games. I just wish that they would bring back the first, technically it's 3 because Persona 2 was split into 2 games, but I wish that they would at least acknowledge that the first 2 games kind of exist.
They didn't exist. They were a figment of your imagination.
They are rough games, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, despite their roughness, they're very good games. And I think part of it is, we'll get into this during the show, but, you know, that first game had some rough translation issues, that's for sure. And there was localization issues with other games in the series, but still, it'd be nice if you put, like, a Persona Classics collection on the eShop.
That would be cool. Kind of like what they do with Final Fantasy games on Steam.
Or like the Suikoden 1 and 2 collection?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's kind of neat to see how far the series has come since its humble beginnings on the PlayStation 1.
Oh, but that's adorable, PlayStation 1.
But we can I will get more into that on our show proper, because there's a rabbit hole that I went down for Persona back in the day, and we're going to talk about it. But that being said, thank you, Noodle and Robert, for hanging out.
Always. It was fun. I love reminiscing about Final Fantasy 14 expansions.
So you'll be back next year for Dawn Trail?
I'll be back here again for Dawn Trail, and then I'll continue being here for every expansion for Final Fantasy 14.
Well, I mean, the thing is, after next year, we're on a hiatus for Final Fantasy 14.
Yeah. We might have to talk about more classic MMOs.
We could get Final Fantasy 11. Just saying.
Yeah.
But do Ion.
Yeah. I played that a lot on a press account, but then I stopped playing it afterwards because the community got toxic AF. I did not enjoy it anymore. Yep.
As MMO communities do sometimes.
Yeah, that does happen sometimes, unfortunately.
And thank you to Matt for hanging out with us, or I say hanging out with us, for coming and saying hi in the beginning, and then
helping with our jokes.
And then going and passing out, as he deserved to, because I forgot how long he said he was on the road. It was like...
He said he got home at 3 a.m. this morning, his time.
Yeah. So that's a lot of time on the road. I don't have the energy for that kind of road trip.
Yeah, neither do I.
But and of course, thank you, listener, for joining us. Tune in a pair of weeks where we're going to talk about Persona 1 and 2. Thanks for hanging out with us. We shall chat at you later.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.